Hello, and thank you for joining today's Family Office in Focus podcast. My name is Mark Tepcik, and I'm the Family Office Design and Governance Strategist for Family Office Solutions. Family Office Solutions is a team of dedicated specialists who work with our private wealth advisors to deliver holistic advice to the firm's wealthiest families. For today's podcast, I am joined by Kirby Rosbach, PhD and founder and CEO of Tamarin Partners and Tamarin Learning Partners. Kirby has prior experience working in the securities industry for a broker-dealer in more than a decade in a prominent multifamily office as head of research and development. Before we begin, I want to mention the following. Tamarin is included within the UBS Professional Network, but is not affiliated with UBS. Inclusion of Tamarin in the Professional Network and the selection of this firm to brief clients on education and family governance is not a recommendation of or a business referral to Tamarin. Kirby, before we dive in, can you give us a little bit of background on yourself? And I know we got into it a little bit a second ago, but a little bit of background on yourself as well as Tamarin.
Sure, Mark. Thanks so much. It's great to be here today. About my background, I grew up in an affluent enterprising family, and perhaps my own sort of gene pool had a lot to do with casting me into the work that I do today. I came up the financial services side, working in a broker-dealer first, then an RIA, and sort of really understanding the investment and finance aspects of affluent and wealthy families. And when I started to do more direct work with clients through Tamarin Partners, what I started to see was sort of this gaping, painful hole that a lot of families have when it comes to education, learning, and preparing family members for the responsibilities of just being born into wealthy and enterprising families. So I knew this firsthand because I experienced this myself growing up, a family that was in timber, and there were many of us who were not actively involved in the business. I did become involved later in my career on our board of directors, but what it just proves so acutely to me is the growing need for families to find resources to be able to partner with and to bring awareness of the complexity of kind of what wealth means and how it impacts people's lives and how it could be leveraged successfully.
Completely understand. And certainly that's a valuable resource for a lot of families out there, just kind of understanding the basics and even going beyond the basics. So such a great service. So today's discussion is really about the intersection of education and family governance. And so can you tell us more about why education and family governance go hand in hand?
Certainly. So, you know, what's so fascinating about many families is that once they sort of identify that there's potentially a need, they oftentimes don't necessarily know who's in charge or how's this supposed to get executed. Do I do this individually? As a parent or a grandparent to my household, is this a broader need? And so the reason governance, specifically family governance, and I can go into the details of what that really really means, but family governance is the rule book. It's the guide post. It's the action plan for, you know, oftentimes a lot of family-led initiatives. And the education piece is usually one of those action items on the docket. And it's sometimes hard to galvanize a family, maybe into its second or third plus generations, to think more broadly around sort of wealth education needs. Now, I'm not talking about higher ed. Do I pursue this college or university? I'm talking about the education that's more around professionalization and bringing up responsible owners and stewards of family wealth or an enterprise. And so family governance is usually hand in hand with education because we need to organize what's included, what's not included. What are we covering? What are we not covering? What are the core areas that we need to educate on or inform our family members? So that's really how I see the two really working together.
No, of course, completely agree. And I call it the complexity of wealth, right? Kind of the fog of wealth. You've got trust, you've got partnerships, you've got boards. How are you making decisions? What are the family values? And a lot of that does reside in governance, or is at least reflected in governance. So why is the need to educate family members in trust beneficiaries specifically so top of mind here? What does the research tell us?
Well, there's a lot of compelling research out there, and you know, many of the folks listening to this call likely know, but you know, we are in the midst of the greatest wealth transfer event in our history, right? So tens of millions, trillions of dollars are passing as boomers are aging out. And so this is happening not just in the United States, but globally. And in this transfer, you know, we're seeing significant wealth and ownership interests transitioning into the hands of trust accounts, particularly where you have one or more beneficiaries. And, you know, not all beneficiaries are created equal. So not everybody has access or awareness or maybe the, you know, sophistication of what it means to be a beneficiary of a trust or how a trust really works or what are the rules or the dispositive provisions of that trust. And so there's a lot of complexity that's happening in this transfer that might not be so clear or easy to access to all the parties that need to know. And then, you know, at some point we have to let that beneficiary know that they are a beneficiary of a trust. And then that information itself might not mean that that individual has any knowledge of what is a trust instrument, how does it work, what's the role of a trustee, who is my trustee, or do I have a corporate trustee, or do I have both? And so this is why it's so important for us to step back and recognize that if we don't put the ground floor, the foundation in for some of these individuals, it's like kind of building a house without an architect, right? It's asking people to like figure out all this information, but not having a good foundation to build off of. And so that is, in my mind, one of the greatest missed opportunities is actually to just educate about that foundational relationship and what it means to be party to a trust so that you start to inculcate these important foundational aspects of responsibility, ownership, stewardship, and then how this is part of a bigger continuity plan.
Yeah, of course. So just a ton of complexity there, even if it's just, you know, the trust of a beneficiary. So let's go on to governance. So what do you mean by family governance? Can you unpack that a little further?
Absolutely. So, you know, Dennis Jaffe and Jim Grubman wrote a wonderful article some years back called The Two Pillars of Governance. And it really talked about the difference between enterprise governance, which we might think about in terms of business operations or family office or trust governance or investment governance. So those are really foundationally legal organized principles built into documents, right? And family governance is really how the rules of the road and how the family engages and what does that rule book look like. And so there are foundational structures, like even a family meeting is an element of family governance. It's a mechanism to bring people together, to share information, to discuss, to vote on, to opine. And so there are different sort of pieces all connected to family governance that have to do things with things like the mission, the vision, the purpose, the rules of engagement. And then you might have underlying entities like a family council or different subcommittees that organize different areas of the family. So sometimes you find families putting like planning and education under family governance, and that is usually a mandate that maybe the family council oversees if they're doing it on a more global scale, and that it's organized by that governing body. And this is where I'm sort of connecting the dots that family governance usually pertains to things that are rooted in the family that really require the family to lead, not outside professionals or even necessarily their family office. And oftentimes need to create structure so there's an understanding of how do I become eligible to sit on a junior board, or how do I ascend is there a policy for family members being employed by the family office or the family business? So these are the kinds of policies, principles, and the, you know, governance areas that are covered when I'm speaking about family governance.
Perfect. So going back to education, so what do family members need to be educated on, specifically the next generation? Can you clarify a little bit more what Tamarind covers here?
Sure. I'm happy to give you some ideas of, I think, the key critical areas that most, enterprising families need their next gen to know, be knowledgeable. And, you know, going back to this wealth transfer event, a lot of technical elements from tax, estate planning, trust, finance, investing, compliance, all of these sort of core disciplines on some levels will touch that beneficiary. And so there has to be some basic knowledge that, you know, that individual can read their investment statements. Do they understand who their professional advisors are and how to work effectively and efficiently with them? Do they understand and know how to read their trusts, or know kind of what are the key provisions in a will to make it valid? So these are some of the basic kinds of core areas. And we see this as a sort of a foundational level of information that sadly doesn't oftentimes get taught anywhere. We'll teach some financial planning and personal finance at the high school level if you're lucky enough to have a finance class at high school or into college. But a lot of times, you know, we don't teach these sort of more significant elements that oftentimes connect to things like the law world. And so it's very common, even, I mean, I have an MBA, and, you know, the business law class covers a lot of different kinds of law, but estate planning, for example, is a very thin slice, maybe a week of that full semester or full year curriculum. So obviously you as an attorney know how much is covered to get your JD. And the estate planning segment is a huge amount of information. We look at it as how do we distill what the beneficiary or the family member needs to know about these core areas to operationalize it, to make it practical for them, not to write documents, not to give legal advice, not to be a lawyer. So those are some of the things that, I see as being really foundational for folks to learn. Now, enterprising, there's family business programs, there's, you know, more specific detailed training that you can get at universities. And so there's, you know, family office tracks and other things that are out there. But at the end of the day, you know, when we think about the beneficiary, they need to know what it means to be a beneficiary, how to work with their trustee, how does this world sort of work vis-a-vis wealth and finance.
So we've got governance. How does governance come into play concerning family member engagement with learning? How do you incorporate governance, and how is learning incorporated into governance?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, a lot of times we're asking family members to be more engaged or more involved, and we have to recognize, do they have what they need to know to be engaged or effective, right? I can tell you a story of, being put on a board fairly early in my life through the family. And even though I had an MBA and I had professional experience, there was a whole level of new awareness of what I didn't know, right, pertaining to my own family's board and business considerations. And so, you know, oftentimes governance helps write the rules of what the expectation for preparation and what you need to know, and gets family members aware of, like, if you want to progress into more responsibility with more oversight and or authority or access, you know, you have to continually grow your own personal knowledge base. And I think this is the connection, right? We want to be educated and informed the more we're being in leadership roles or having more access to decision making and pulling on the oar for our families. And so I think this is the key, is that governance can be almost like an opener to gaining access to more opportunities. And we need to know that our family members are educated and prepared. I think the other piece of governance is that, you know, we're setting the parameters that, you know, not all education initiatives, for example, might be covered by family governance. If you decide you want to go take a pottery class or study ornithology, those things may not necessarily connect to your origin of wealth or to your family enterprise. So those probably would be declined, right? But if you're saying, hey, I want to go study or go to a program that I can learn about investing or entrepreneurship or family governance, you know, those things might be more eligible or considered attributable to your family wealth knowledge and supporting a family governance mandate.
So there's a lot to unpack here, right? And so we're thinking of, you know, beneficiaries of families, of wealthy families who are often, you know, clearly next gen. And so some of them might be very motivated to learn, be included in governance, and others just might, you know, not necessarily understand or know where to start. And so that could lead to really just somebody who doesn't know where to engage or how to engage, right? Or even why to engage. So specifically, what are the carrots and sticks here that enhance a family getting their education initiative off the ground?
Well, I think we have to be honest and that family culture has a lot to do with carrots and sticks, meaning you might be a family that kind of motivates with more of an iron hand, and perhaps you use more sticks, meaning you make it a directive. You want to have access to XYZ, then you need to follow suit and complete XYZ. So those families might use more sticks. I've also seen other families who use more carrots, where they might say, if you want to have more opportunities to come into the family business or to have access to your to become on the distribution committee, then these are, so there might be these carrots that are put out there to drive engagement and interest. And so I think it's really understanding how your family operates, where is the ethos and what's going to be most successful, and what's going to generate results. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm going to tell you, regardless of carrots and sticks, it's important to connect to family members the why. Why is it that we have family governance, and what's it intended to do, and why does it matter? And why, if we're going to learn, why do we put this as a value in our family system, and why are we pushing this as a priority in our strategic agenda? And I think that is almost as important as the carrots and sticks.
All right, so let's switch gears a bit. So a lot of the people listening could be, you know, financial advisors, right? And so they often come from a background in the markets, investing, finance. And some of them do have a little bit of background in governance, and they may have been around it for a while. But what role can an advisor play in education here?
Well, I think oftentimes advisors are the first point of contact for a client when they're thinking about, you know, the gap of learning or the pain point that maybe a next gen not being fully aware or engaged or knowledgeable. And so advisors are on the front lines, and they oftentimes see the train wreck before it happens, right? They see what will happen as mom and dad or grandparents have amassed significant wealth and have intentions of passing on that wealth. And they also oftentimes know through their clients if they have fear or pain or trepidation of how that's going to help, you know, happen in their family. Advisors might say, I like to teach. I feel really connected to my clients. It's something I enjoy. It's something I want to do. And then I would say, boy, there are increasingly more resources out there to support you, to support your client. And some of that might be right from the work mark that you've developed through UBS. Through your resource center. And then sometimes that might be partnering with outside resources, a university, e-learning such as Tamron Learning, or other outsourced, you know, resources that are out there. I think there's also a growing contingent of advisors who say, I really love this, but you know what, I think my client wants to do this on their own or doesn't necessarily think that I'm the person to deliver it. And I think that's a high, what I'll call EQ advisor, who recognizes when it's going to be additive to a relationship to take on that role and when actually it might be harmful and it might be better not necessarily to be on the hook to deliver education and learning. So, you know, I think the advisor, again, is the tip of the spear. They're often the one who recognize and is the first call to say, hey, we have a problem here and I want to get ahead of this. Or they're also the first person to get the call of, hey, something's gone really wrong and how can I fix this? And I think sometimes, you know, an advisor on some levels is always providing education. It's just how deep they want to go into the types of education we're talking about today.
All right. So back to governance. So, you know, I see a lot of families here that, you know, they know that the next generation needs to get involved. They know they need maybe a better process, a better way to communicate as far as how decisions are made or even why decisions are made, but they don't know where to start. And so where might a family start concerning family governance? Like, how do you build it? How do you think about it? What are some of the initial thoughts there when families are just getting started with their governance?
Yeah, so I think the advisor can be one of those touchstones that can help say it's okay if you feel like a fish out of water, or that you don't feel like you have this all figured out, that a lot of families are figuring out governance real time. And the advisor is sitting in the driver's seat or sometimes in the passenger seat, helping them do that work. And then if they're not in the car and they just know this family is working on this, they might be bringing in a third-party consultant or some other resources from the outside to help them get educated about the complexity. I have a client, for example, right now who does a lot of their own research and diligence. I provide resources. I make suggestions of books and podcasts and articles. And they're figuring out what's going to be best for their own family and family office situation. And then we work together and talk about masterminding further, how the rollout, how the engagement, how she's the tip of the spear, but maybe there's a lot more family members who need to be part of building these conversations. And I want to tell you, we're talking about governance as a marathon. This is not a sprint. You don't just pick this up and decide one day we're going to implement a whole bunch of family governance. It starts small with formative conversations that probably lead to a family meeting, and that family meeting might lead to more conversations around how can we deepen and build layer by layer family governance. And so, again, it's one of those areas that an advisor can play an instrumental role in getting it started, fueling that fire and that interest, and also just knowing that they can also reiterate to the client why this is so beneficial. Because governance on a lot of levels can de-risk many situations because there are rules in place, right? There's metrics in place that can kind of get in front of hopefully negative consequences of, say, families getting off the track or having conflict and leading to litigation. And so we want to be able to manage conflicts productively, and family governance is kind of one of our greatest tools to thwart that, to enhance that objective.
No, I completely agree. Family governance isn't something that you're going to do once, and everything's going to be better. I mean, it's, to your point, it's a marathon, and consistency is key, but it's also about fighting through those kind of ebbs, because they're not always going to be flows, right? And so if you could get through kind of the low times of family engagement, which comes through governance, then, you know, that should lead to better outcomes. So, you know, you've got kind of the governance component of it, and then you've got learning, but it's really taking a step back and saying, okay, here's where we're at today, right? And so we're pretty good at X, Y, Z, but A, B, and C, we're really not that great on as a family, maybe individually. And so what are some resources out there that are helpful when assessing kind of learning gaps and goals?
Yeah, so I think there's some pretty cool assessments and tools out there for gauging like next gen learning needs. And so I can definitely point you to a couple different resources. Scott Peppett has developed a sort of cool spider graphic map that can help assess learning areas and interest areas. Cameron Learning also has a whole assessment that gauges people's knowledge and interest around different concepts and content. And, you know, at the end of the day, one of the easiest things an advisor can do is just to start to peel back the layers with each member of a family and talk to them about kind of where they're at and what their life goals are and what they're trying to achieve. I like to sort of sometimes connect the real, the now, the actual events that are happening in people's lives, and then help the client sort of see how that connects to learning areas. And I'll give you an example. You know, a client who says, hey, my son or daughter is like just found the love of their life and they're talking marriage already. And then you bring up, oh, well, that's super exciting. You know, have you talked to them about, you know, a prenup, or have you given them more education on like the financial side of marriage and like what that means about their values and how they see spending or budgeting or planning? And so sometimes life events become a trigger for an advisor to say, hey, there's all these things. Does your family member know, or do you know, right? Hey, I'm thinking about retiring in 5 years, and that's great. And tell me about, like, you know, we know what your accounts say, but let's talk about your lifestyle. What will that mean for you? So what's the financial planning we need to think about? So sometimes when you start to bring up the consequences, those trigger learning opportunities. And so, you know, I can point you to different assessments, but as an advisor, I'd highly encourage folks to do what you probably already do, which is to really tease out the implications of decisions that are being made around their investments, their accounts, their where they want to live, who they want to gift to. All those things require bigger conversations of how much do you know, how much does the person that you want to impact know, and that can all be fed into sort of a learning agenda.
Great. So, you know, you've got all these learning initiatives, you've got governance initiatives. How do you organize it all? So specifically, I guess what I'm saying is are there any resources out there for building an education plan or talking about wealth?
Absolutely. So that is something we're super duper focused on. You know, we recognize that education planning is sort of a foundational element to getting usually education off the ground. And we have some great tools and resources through Tamron Learning that you can get no cost. It's free and it's accessible for advisors to take a look at. We have white papers explaining the education planning process. And then we also have education planning tools and assessments that you can actually run through and use with your client. So again, these require nothing of using anything from Tamron Learning, but we provide those tools and those resources just to help you as the advisor get going and then really piece together what is it that your client needs. And that might be from multiple disciplines. You know, education is multimodal, meaning we learn in a lot of different capacities. We might learn through a podcast that we listen to. We might go to a local event. We might jump into an online course or to, you know, a community that we're into. So I think we have to recognize that planning needs to be able to take into account those broader opportunities.
One last thing. How does Tamron Learning support advisors who've got clients in need of adult learning around wealth? So specifically here, we're talking about adult learning.
Yeah, so that's our specialty. And at the end of the day, one thing we pride ourselves in is creating safe, private, secure opportunities for a client to learn and to connect the advisor who brought us that client so that it's you know, seamless, right? So you're not disintermediated by some third party who's not letting you have access or sharing in the learning with you, the advisor. I think that's really important because at the end of the day, we want to work collaboratively. And I would caution those providers that actually don't want to embrace the advisor as part of the learning team. And, you know, one of the things that we've recognized is that sometimes the advisor really needs to run point. And other times they might come to us and say, hey, we want to be connected, but we actually want you or we want the client to drive this. And at the end of the day, we're all working towards the same agenda, which is we want to help this individual or this family get prepared, get educated, and feel empowered. And at the end of the day, advisors know smart, educated clients are, easier clients to work with. Why? Because they're responsive when you ask for a request. They get the urgency, or they understand why it's important to read the detail. They will ask more intelligent questions and make more thoughtful decisions. And they typically will be more engaged clients, which is great for the ones that we want to work with, retain, and sustain.
So, Kirby, this has been great. Do you have anything that you'd like to leave our listeners with before we go here today?
I just want to encourage the opportunity that's in front of you, and that, you know, you're going to see all the time the moments of possibility. And we know the other real glaring issue out there, which is about 80% of clients will fire their advisor as it transitions to that next generation. And I'm sort of like, boy, if we can engage and get them, you know, well-versed about who we are, what we do, and their needs, that makes it feel connected to the future beneficiaries and the future clients of UBS. And so I'm a big believer that education is really strong and smart planning for client retention and streamlined succession and building a stronger foundation with our clients over time.
Kirby, this has been great, and I want to thank you again for your time today, specifically for our discussion on the intersection of family governance and learning and education. And everyone, thank you for listening in. For more information on Tamarind Partners, the professional network, Family Office Solutions, please reach out to your private wealth advisors. Thank you, and have a great day.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.